Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. And Jim, as usual, our good martini comes with a little bit of good and a little bit of bad. I mean, most of our good martinis lately have been, look how bad Obamacare is. There's different ways you have to look at things that can in the long term be good news. And one of them comes from a new poll from the Associated Press and GFK. This was an online survey, but it was scientific. And the bad news is that 62% of those surveyed blame Republicans for the shutdown. But if you go down further in the story, most Americans disapprove of the way President Obama is handling his job. The poll suggests with 53% unhappy with his performance and 37% approving it. Congress down at 5% approval, so that's not good. But, Jim, clearly this is a president who just, and it seems like a long time ago, 9 months ago, was riding into the high 50s. He's lost 20 points since then.
I tweeted a bit about this, and there's a lot of pushback from the left. Oh, it's an online poll. Well, actually, they selected the people by phone or through mail and then went back and reached them online to ask them their questions. So that's, you know, a fairly large sample size. We're looking at 1,227 adults. And usually adults is, you know, where Democrats do better. But I think what's more is it's not that surprising that, you know, people are not happy with the government shutdown. They see, you know, the National Park Service, you know, blocking out World War II veterans. And they see all the other little effects around the country. And they say, well, by golly, you know, this is dumb and they don't like it. And so unsurprisingly, they end up not liking everybody. And so, yeah, this is hurting Republicans, but it's also hurting congressional Democrats, and it's also hurting President Obama. And it's one of those things where I kind of wonder if there's been a pretty key miscalculation on the part of Obama and the Democrats that, you know, that they're going to make a big mess and the mud's going to land on the Republicans and that, you know, they'll come out of this, you know, smelling sweet as a rose. No, everybody's going to stink after this. And if President Obama could say, well, he's not running for re-election, so it doesn't really matter. No, but he wants to be in the best position possible, particularly as the 2014 midterms to come above. And I think one of the other things kind of sticks with this is this sense that hasn't President Obama, who once was, you know, touted as no drama Obama, become the president of the perpetual crisis? We had the 2011 showdown. We had the fiscal cliff negotiations towards the end of the year. And then we have this one. Already it's a government shutdown. We're on day 8 or 9, and there's really not much sign of much progress. Now we're approaching the debt ceiling. There's always this sense of impending doom in these negotiations. Both liberal listeners to the Three Martini Lunch are probably screaming that it's the Republicans right now. The Republicans are, you know, part of the equation. They deserve some of the responsibility. This is all happening on President Obama's watch. And I think for a lot of people, particularly the more you go to the center, and I think the more you go into what we traditionally call the low information voters, the folks who aren't following every little twist and turn of the Washington debate here, are going to say they're all a bunch of kids. They're all a bunch of folks who are acting immature and unwilling to compromise and being stubborn and finger pointing and all that stuff. There's a moment, Greg and I can say this both being parents, Greg probably has this to look forward to in a couple of years, where you're driving the car and there's fighting in the back seat and you tell them to knock it off and they start insisting who started it and who's really responsible. And you start saying, I don't care who started it. I will turn this car around right now. That is the mood of the American public right now. And the idea that Democrats are, you know, 4 points better than the Republicans on who is more to blame, you know, that's not a win. You know, that's not good news for the party. It's not good news for anybody, except unless you're very far from Washington. So maybe Chris Christie and Bobby Jindal like this, but otherwise everybody else is going to say this is a example of government failing to function, failing to take care of the basic things it's supposed to do, and an absolute failure of leadership on the part of the president to get anybody to give any ground and avoid the worst consequences.
On to martini number two now, Jim, and this is something you had forewarned for a while now, and that was some of the things that are much more serious than others when it comes to the cessation of certain government operations. And you said this even before the shutdown started, and it came into full bloom this week, but other families have been dealing with this, and that's death benefits for those lost in the line of duty. And I believe the number, at least as of yesterday, was 17 since the shutdown, and there are four families in particular that were denied funding for the trips to come to Dover for the return ceremony of American dead. And so you have some folks like the Fisher House trying to cover the difference there. John Boehner says, you know, we passed legislation that could easily be interpreted that funding is allowed for this. Now he says they're going back to do that specifically since the administration won't do it. So, again, not sure how you spread the blame around here. But the idea that these people have to suffer in this situation is just deplorable.
And I've just, right before we came on to tape this podcast, I heard from a house aide, and unfortunately I'm not allowed to identify him any more than that, although I guess you know it's a male now, because I use the pronoun him, who said that right before the shutdown, that the controller of the Department of Defense says the death gratuity would be affected by the shutdown. So Congress passes, and the president signs the Pay Our Military Act, which includes authorization for all military benefits, and everybody in Congress believed that this would include the death gratuity. So Thursday, Friday, they start hearing that it's not, you know, that the Pentagon doesn't think that it covers the death gratuity, even though Congress believed that it did. So Joe Wilson, you remember from You Lie!
Sure.
From South Carolina, sends a letter to Secretary Hagel saying, is there a problem with the death gratuity, and what else do you need a specific authorization for? This is on Friday of last week. No response. So now, the Today Show, instead of, you know, Department of Defense, is saying that the families are not going to receive the death gratuity, and Republicans in Congress are saying, wait a minute, we passed something to cover this, and you're saying it doesn't. And so, while it might have been nice to have this specifically written out in that Pay Our Military Act, it does certainly suggest that perhaps the Pentagon is either not defining their mandate as broadly as they can, and this is an innocent mistake, or this is a genuine sense of shutdown theater and a very cruel maneuver to basically give aren't Republicans terrible story, when in fact it actually is a case in which they very much approve what they were supposed to, you know, approve, and they thought this was already taken care of.
There is the outside distant possibility that Chuck Hagel just doesn't know what he's doing.
What are the odds of that, right?
I'm sure if you asked him directly, there would be at least 35 uhs in one sentence, but we'll leave it at that and just hope that, obviously, that this gets rectified and the Pentagon understands that they do have the ability to send out those payments to families. Good heavens. All right, on to martini number three now, Jim, and if you're like most political reporters, you pretty much had your afternoon gobbled up by waiting for President Obama to come to the press conference and then droning on and on and on and not really saying anything new. I think my favorite explanation of his of what was going on in this debate over the shutdown and the default is that the Republican strategy was that since President Obama is so responsible and will never let us default, that they can make demands and he would have to accept them. So it's good to see the humility growing in our president. But more important than that, there was at least, close to an hour of questions, most of them from people who were clearly sympathetic to the president and some who, you know, were more mainstream. Huffington Post, though, got like the second or third question. But none of the questions dealt with the horrific problems with Obamacare. None of them dealt with the president's petty implementation of the shutdown with our national parks and memorials and so forth. All of it was about shutdown theater, and most of the questions were not exactly challenging.
Two really big omissions. And look, it's not that the government shutdown isn't a story. You know, there's nothing wrong with asking about that initial question. There's nothing wrong with asking about the state of negotiations. There's nothing wrong with asking about the debt ceiling. The question about the Supreme Court case on campaign finance law seemed kind of out of left field, but you could even forgive that if there'd been any question about the Obamacare exchanges, and there wasn't. If there'd been any question about the National Park Service and all the various manifestations of the shutdown and the treatment of veterans and all kinds of other stuff, and there was none of that stuff, and a bunch of the questions were pretty much, you know, there were like two questions, both the direct question and then a follow-up based about, is China benefiting? Which you might as well say, you know, Mr. President, would you like the opportunity to attack your opposition on being weak on national security? Would you like to attack House Republicans for endangering U.S. national security? And of course, President Obama did that. So as it went on and on, I could understand making, you know, like the National Park Service might not be the first question. I could understand the Obamacare exchanges failing to function as they're supposed to might not be the first question. But you would kind of expect at some point in a case of like, was it 10 or 11 questions that would come up? And it never did. Getting folks like not just Britt Hume, but a couple other veteran, you know, White House correspondents who said that this White House is softer on Obama than pretty much any other one that they can possibly remember. And it's, you know, we're 5 years in. If they're not going to get tough on him now, when are they going to? The AP poll we cited earlier this podcast suggests the people are a lot tougher on him than the White House press corps is.
And the fascinating part about this, in addition to what was obviously a lack of tough questions yesterday, is how frequently you'll hear, and it's usually not very directly, but behind the scenes, even liberal organizations just so frustrated about their lack of access to this president, how hard it is to get direct answers to questions. And yet, as soon as there's any sort of conflict, they line up dutifully and salute smartly. And it's just really sad.
It is. It's rather frustrating that if you really feel he's not answering the questions, reflect it in your coverage. All right. I mean, occasionally you'll get the correction. If you don't agree with if they don't react to FOIA requests, they don't respond to, if they, you know, berate reporters for writing things they don't like, all of that stuff that they do, they know that they'll get one critical story of it, and they can take that hit. It's the White House. They have very big issues going on. The news cycle moves faster than ever. The consequences of shutting out the press, manipulating them, berating them, and, you know, bullying them into, you know, only writing the stories the White House wants, the consequences of that behavior perhaps never been lower, never been lesser, never been less consequential.
Well, on that happy note, with the
we need genuine happy news one of these days. You know, the day's going to come when you're going to talk about the Bears and I'm going to talk about the Jets, and that's going to be the good martini, Greg.
Yeah, well, the Bears need to start winning again. The Jets actually won a game very few people expected them to win.
That for Tuesday's good martini.
Jim, have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Thursday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.